John Santelli, and I'm from Columbia University now. I'd like to thank my co-conspirators on this, Laura Lindberg from Guttmacher, Mark Orr with me at Columbia, Rachel Jones from Guttmacher, and Eileen Spicer snuck into this, and I forgot her, so she's actually at UNC. And finally, Larry Finer. Okay. But you shouldn't hold this against them, because I never sent them the final slides. Okay. So, just some background. It's estimated about half of pregnancies are unintended in this country. Half of them and half of those end in abortion. Hi, Stanley. Nice you to come today. Unintended pregnancy is associated with a variety of adverse health experiences, some which occur before, some which occur during, and some which occur afterwards. So risk behaviors increase during pregnancy. And one sees deleterious outcomes, both for mom in some cases, but also for children. And unintended pregnancy really reflects the failure of health and social systems that might have prevented that unintended pregnancy, and also the difficulties that women and couples have in achieving reproductive health goals. So we have national goals, if you will, to reduce unintended pregnancy. Okay, so how is this defined? Conventionally or traditionally, it's defined, traditionally the data is collected retrospectively about a specific pregnancy, right? And unintended pregnancies are made up of those that are unwanted, or wound wanted no or no more children, those that are missed time, those that arrive too soon, wanted to wait a couple more years until I finished high school, and those that end in induced abortion. Intended pregnancies are usually those that are wanted and on time, or also those that are overdue. We've been trying for 2 years to get pregnant, and we finally, okay. Just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. There are some problems, however, with this measurement scheme. The first of which is the conventional measure dichotomizes all pregnancies into those that are unintended and those that are intended. And usually when I give this lecture, I ask everybody to raise their hand if they were an intended or an unintended. And most people say, well, it's a little more complicated than that when my mother explained it to me. Anyway, so it simplifies an incredibly complex process that's probably multidimensional, that includes cognitive, emotional, relationships, issues, and importantly, life circumstances. Importantly, the intentions of abortion patients are not always measured. One assumes that in small surveys, that's a pretty good assumption, but they're often not. And the degree of mistiming varies greatly. So the mistiming may be several months. I really wanted to have the baby after I defended my dissertation. And sometimes it's much greater, maybe 2 to 4 years. And Pulley and Clareman have a nice, very nice paper that looks at degree of mistiming and the importance of those. And not surprising, those that are more severe we miss time to have much more deleterious sequelae. There's also a conceptual critique. There's also conceptual critique which suggests that unintended pregnancy may fail to reflect the way people decide to have children. Many people fail to plan pregnancies or fail to form intentions. So they answer the questions, but they may not have really planned it. There are multiple barriers to contraceptive choice and abortion, so intentions may not match up with outcomes. Therefore, intentions imperfectly reflect contraceptive use. And remarkably, motivations to have children may not be the only reason to have sex. Anyway, the conventional measure also ignores the intentions of the male partner, okay? Although the newer questionnaires often include that, both the international surveys and the National Survey of Family Growth. But they also may neglect power dynamics going on in relationships or power dynamics going on in families. So if a mother-in-law really expects the daughter-in-law to have a baby, her own intentions may not be expressed. Okay. So in 95 and 2002, the National Survey of Family Growth in this country added some new measures to get a better understanding of this phenomenon of pregnancy intention. They added some new measures And the ones that have been seem to be most successful and were carried through to 2002 include things like happiness about a pregnancy, trying to get pregnant, planning a pregnancy, or wanting a pregnancy with that specific partner. And we also now have in that survey, well, we also have men's reports, which I'm not going to talk about today, but we also have women's reports of their partner's intentions. Okay. So in this study, we explored some of these new measures of pregnancy intentions. We used several analytical methods. I would say we were eclectic. We threw a lot of things at the data and tortured them. We looked at correlations among measures and used things like factor analysis. And then we validated these discovered dimensions by looking at correlations of intentions with pregnancy outcomes, particularly how the pregnancy ended, whether it ended as an abortion, a live birth, or as a miscarriage. And we're hoping to, the next stage of this is to look at contraceptive use at the time of pregnancy. Okay, so again, the objectives were to identify these key dimensions and understand how these dimensions vary by age, race, ethnicity, and eventually SES. Okay, again, we used correlation, statistics, exploratory factor analysis, description. We try to deconstruct the conventional measure. The conventional measure is made up of several questions and ends up with several categories, and along the way, you come up with a larger number of categories. I'll show you that in a second. We examine some of the minor categories, things like overdue and the response don't care. We stratified by gender and race ethnicity, and we examine both bivariate correlations with pregnancy outcomes, as I mentioned. But we also looked at abortion ratios, the ratio of number of abortions divided by the number of births in a particular strata in the data. And finally, we used multivariate logistic regression to essentially predict the decision either for a live birth or an abortion. Okay? People nodding their heads yes. The graduate students understand at least what I'm saying. Okay. So these are the measures available in the NSFG. The conventional measure can be broken up into those six categories: overdue, on time, is time or too soon, unwanted, and don't care, and don't know. We're not sure what don't know is. We think it's missing. But anyway, if mistimed, the degree of mistiming, the attitudinal ones are happy, wanting, trying to get pregnant, want a baby with a partner, and then also we have essentially the woman's perception of her partner's response to the conventional question. Okay? So that's all we got. But turned out to be a lot. This is the deconstruction. Again, you can see those categories. The first four end up as intended, and the last two end up as unintended. Did I get that right, Bill? I think so, yeah. Okay. And don't care and don't know are pretty small categories, so it's not real important where you might put them. But I'm jumping ahead. Okay. So we did, the first was just this large correlation matrix, which looked at all the different categories, the deconstructed measure and the attitudinal ones. And we also did this, we did separate matrices by age and race ethnicity, okay? And a lot of those separate analyses didn't show very much, but I'll tell you where that is. Okay. So the bottom line from the correlational matrices is the attitudinal ones are highly correlated. R's of 0.6 to 0.9, so those first four variables really cluster very well. Interestingly, though, is the second. Women's response and women's report of partner response on the conventional variable also were highly correlated, slightly lower, 0.4 to 0.6. Okay? And teens just had lower correlation sort of across the board on these measures. Again, teens are in less permanent relationships, so you'd probably expect that. And there were some odd things. They couldn't answer very well the overdue question. I mean, it's just not a particularly relevant category for them. But we found very few differences by race ethnicity. Okay, so what are the exploratory factor analysis, again, tries to look at correlational structure, but then it tries to identify underlying factors or dimensions, so-called latent variables, that account for the covariation. So what did that find? Okay. And I've got a statistician who's a real egghead. And so we did just a plain vanilla factor analysis, and he said, no, we have to stratify in each of the dichotomous variables, because if you take a multichotomous variable and break it up into dichotomous variables, all the zeros are correlated. This is something I would never think of, but he did. So we actually did sort of separate factor analysis and tried to, again, see what we found. And what did we find? We found there are essentially two dimensions that are readily identifiable. The first is we're calling desire for pregnancy. It includes the attitudinal ones, the four I talked about before, and then missed timing. There's also a couple of minor categories. Overdue really sits by itself. It's not really on time. It's really overdue. And don't care. And the don't care variable is really interesting because it's highly correlated with miscarriage. Now think about that a second. It's probably, again, when you're thinking about retrospective reported data, it's probably sort of a rationalization. Okay. Anyway, again, we found very few differences by age and race ethnicity. So everybody had the same factor structure, if you will. And I won't show you the tables because they're horrible. Okay, so then how did we do in predicting outcomes? Again, we looked at these bivariate stats, and then we did a series of logistic regressions. I'm not going to show you all this because we get really boring. But we looked at first how demographics predicted the outcome of live birth versus abortion. And we looked at how the live birth was predicted by our dimensions, if you will. And then we combined those, and then finally we looked at some interactions. And there actually are some very interesting interactions by race ethnicity. So, okay, so these are how well, this is actually the conventional variable, and how well this predicts whether somebody has a live birth or an abortion. So these are abortion ratios. So 0.38 says there are 38 abortions for every 100 live births, just to make sure everybody's on the same page. So both unwanted and mistimed are likely to result in abortion. Don't care, I think I've mentioned. And very few of the on time and the overdue end up as abortions. Those are the ones that are very much wanted. Obviously, there may be an on time birth with a prenatal diagnosis that's going to end up as an abortion. But the conventional measure ain't bad. That's pretty good, huh? We don't see those kind of high ratios or discrepancies between ratios for lots of things, and certainly in behavioral intention kinds of questions. This then adds in the male partner, the woman's report of the male partner, and again, almost an identical pattern. There is some fuzziness around the don't care, and that may reflect, again, partnerships where, you know, there's not a, it's not a solid partnership. Okay, these are now the attitudinal variables. Again, the best predictor here seems to be happiness. And again, look at the discrepancy between 0.83 and 0.02, 40-fold difference, if you will. Similar pattern with wanting. What happens, this is a 10, each of these are 10-point scales, but guess what? People either reported as high, medium, or low, because it's easy. And so we try codomize this variable. Okay, this is again wanting with partner. Again, you see the same kind of a pattern. This is, what is this? Oh, this is stratified now by race ethnicity, and again you don't see much difference. Happiness has the same pattern. It also has the same pattern for teenagers and adults. I'm just not going to show you that today. But again, these huge differences, as much as 80-fold for whites, slightly more noise for African Americans, and a similar pattern for Hispanics. This is degree of mistiming. And again, I just point out the scale gets a little bigger as we go from this set of slides to this set of slides. So you can see now we have an abortion ratio of over 1. I guess I should have said this. It's labeled unadjusted. We know that half of the abortions are not reported on the NSFG. And so in a second stage, we're going to go through and adjust these abortion ratios. There's a nice new paper out by Rachel Jones that essentially by strata identifies where the underreporting is. Okay. But again, you see this pretty striking pattern of intentions differing by outcome. Now, this is actually, I think, the most interesting finding in the data. This is mistiming, degree of mistiming. Again, if it's over 5 years, 60% almost of those or more of those pregnancies end in abortion, whereas it's six out of 106 of the, you know, the bottom strata. For African Americans, there really isn't that same kind of gradient at all. It's a much flatter kind of distribution. And for Hispanics, you see a similar distribution to white. So there's something very different going on around timing for African American. And we really need to repeat this or run the data by SES to see if we get a similar pattern for poor women. Okay. And then this is the logistic regression. And, oh, you know, there's lots of things that predict a live birth versus an abortion, including cohabitation and poverty. But you can see desire, which is a 6-point scale or 7-point scale here, mistiming, and whether a pregnancy is overdue. All of them are highly then predictive in a multivariate way of outcome. Okay, so what the heck does all this mean? I think it reaffirms, actually, the very early notion. The first time that people put these questions together, demographers put these questions together, they talked about timing and wanting. So they were pretty smart. I think both of those dimensions are very important. However, it suggests that these are perhaps dimensions, if you will, a continuous scale, and not categories. It's not a 0-1. It's really, I don't know how many points on the scale is, but it's clearly goes from high to low, and the outcome of those are quite different. It also suggests that some of the minor categories are distinct. Overdue is different than on time. It also suggests that we find pretty similar decision-making among young and old and between the three racial and ethnic groups that we commonly report data on. The exception of that is that mistiming was much less important for black women. Okay, some of the limitations in the next step. Again, you have to say it. It's always self-reported data. In addition, we've got recall issues. But again, I think there's a rich literature on the accuracy of reporting a pregnancy intention, so we know it's pretty good data. We know abortion is underreported, so we're going to need to do some adjustments. We need to look at SES. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what relation is between SES and mistiming. I think poor women perhaps have fewer choices, fewer occupational, educational choices. So mistiming may literally be less relevant than desire to have a baby. And finally, we plan to examine pregnancy intentions and contraceptive use at the time of pregnancy. Okay. Well, what are the implications of this? I think we need to improve the way we categorize intentions. I think we do a good job, actually, of measuring it. The conventional question is actually pretty good, and the happiness questions add some important additional data. But again, presenting it as a dichotomous outcome, I think, is difficult. I've already mentioned this issue about mistiming and SES and race ethnicity. I think we probably need to stop talking about ambivalence and perhaps start talking about complexity and nuance. And finally, I think focusing on mistiming and desire may produce more effective programs to help women and men to realize their reproductive goals. Thank you.